Okay, welcome everybody. It is wonderful to have you here joining us as we get ready for Pesach. We've been spending some time trying to make sense of the Maggid section of the Haggadah, of the Passover Haggadah. The Maggid section is the main section of the Haggadah where we fulfill the mitzvah of telling the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. We fulfill the mitzvah of telling the story of our ancestors leaving Egypt. And we have been dealing with one central question. We dealt with it last week from the basis of, from the perspective of Rabbi Soloveitchik, Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. And today we are going to deal with the, try to answer this question from the perspective of a different rabbi, Rabbi Yitzchak Huttner, who was the, actually, I'll get you some information on Rabbi Yitzchak Huttner because it's important to have a little background on who it is that we are studying. So Rabbi Yitzchak Huttner, he was born in 1906 and he died in 1980. He was a Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Chaim Berlin in Brooklyn, New York. Which is an institution that grew under his leadership. And he was a fascinating figure in that he combined, it was a blend of Hasidut and Mitnagdit, like Hasidut and Hasidic and non-Hasidic elements of teaching that in fact represented his family makeup as well, was sort of a mixed makeup. He was born in Warsaw, Poland, to a family with Hasidic roots, as well as Lithuanian roots, non-Hasidic roots. He is well known for a collection of work that was published by his daughter called Pachad Yitzchak, and we are going to study some of that. We are going to study that tonight. So that's it. He's very, actually quite a deep figure and a very interesting figure. And there's a lot to say about him and to just to spend time on his biography, which we're not going to do tonight. But he is a really, really interesting figure. And I'm hopeful that we are going to appreciate some of his teachings tonight. So let's get back to sharing the screen now and we will get to.
Rabbi, I think Marcia has a question.
Oh, yes. Okay, Marsha, I didn't see you. Yes. Thank you. Marsha, do you have a question?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can,
Now,
yes.
is he related to our Cantor Putner here in Denver?
No, this is Huttner. Huttner.
Oh, Kutzner. Sorry,
Yeah,
different
no,
name.
yeah, different name. No worries.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay,
Thank you,
thank
thank you.
you.
No, thank you. Okay, here we go. So the question that we're dealing with is. There's one small paragraph from the book of Devarim, from the book of Deuteronomy, that makes up the main section of Maggid. We read it verse by verse, and we explain the verses in the Torah from Devarim based on other verses in the Torah. It's like an intercontextual midrash. We use verses in essentially in Shemot to explain verses in Devarim. Before we get there, I thought we would just spend a few minutes on understanding the source, the origin of some of the things that we do at our Seder. And they come from the 10th chapter of Masechet Psachim, of the Tractate Psachim in the Talmud. And there are a series of Mishnayot, of rabbinic teachings, that actually explain and lay out the step-by-step procedure of the Seder. So, for example, this first source that you see in on the page, I want to just put the numbers in. Source number one, it says "Mazgu lo kosheni," so they pour the leader of the Seder the second cup, and the Mishnah goes on to say, and now the son asks questions about the Seder, about what's different about the Seder night than every other night. Things have been going on at the table. that hopefully have piqued the interest of the children, and they begin to ask questions. And then the Mishnah says, if the child is unable to ask their own questions, they don't pick up the differences of the night, then the father teaches them. And then it goes through the four questions. Now, some of these four questions are not quite the same because, for example, this is from the Temple Times. In the Temple Times, they were bringing a korban. They were bringing the paschal sacrifice. So, for example, one of the questions is, as on all other nights, we eat either roasted, stewed, or cooked meat, but on this night, all the meat is the roasted meat of the paschal lamb, of the paschal sacrifice. Now, that's obviously not something that we do, and we'll see in a moment that we, in fact, change the question in post temple times in order to reflect what's actually going on at our Sederim. Let me just stop here for 1 second. If anyone has any comments or questions, feel free to unmute yourself and just jump in, or you could use the raise hand function on Zoom to ask a question. And then the Mishnah goes on to continue with what happens at the Seder, and then gets to the point that we are at. Right over here, it says, Matchil biginut umisayim b'shevach, v'doresh me'arami oved avi, ad sheyigmor kol haparsha kula. This is rather important. We have a halacha, as stated in the Mishnah, and agreed upon by all future and later authorities, that the way that the Seder is organized is that we begin with an element of Jewish history, which is the language here is disgraceful, or we would say negative. So I'm trying to highlight it, but it's not seem to be working. Negative. And then we finally get to something that is positive. Oh, here we go. And this is the section highlighted down below. He begins, meaning the Seder leader begins with the Jewish people's disgrace and concludes with their glory. And in addition to that, we also have to read the section of Deuteronomy, which is the section I started discussing, from Arami Oved Avi, an Aramean tried to destroy my father, which starts in chapter 26, verse 5. And we're going to see that whole section in a moment. Just a word on this question, this notion of starting with something negative and then moving on to something positive. For example, we start with Avadim Hayinu Leparo B'Mitzrayim. We were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt, and then we were freed. So we start with something negative and conclude with something positive. Or we start with Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Originally, we were idolaters, and now we serve God. Those are two different opinions as to where to start, what negative element to start with. In the end, we do both of them. But this, in fact, is the way that our Seder is organized, starting with something negative and then ending with something positive. And we have this section of Deuteronomy. So this Mishnah is actually quite relevant to us as it lays out how we run our Seder. The Rambam codifies it as well, just to show you. And he says, Bizman hazeh, in our day and age, eino omer v'halayla hazeh kulo tzli, she'en lanu karban, right? We don't say the one of our four questions is not about the roasted food of the karban pesach, of the paschal sacrifice, because we don't have a paschal sacrifice. Okay. I'm going to stop there and see. I've been going for a few minutes. See if there are any comments or questions. These are all sort of introductory comments to to the main event, which we're going to start in a few minutes. All right, any comments or questions so far? Okay, great. So let's continue. I want to take a brief look at this section from the book of Exodus as a way also to get us ready for Rav Huttner's comments. This is chapter 6, the first 9 verses of chapter 6, where God tells Moshe, look, it's time for you to tell Bnei Israel that the time has finally come for them to be redeemed, right? This is a big moment, right? God says in verse 1, Ata tireh, now or soon you will see what I'm going to do to Paro, ki biyad chazaka yishalchem, ubiyad chazaka yigarshem me'artzo. Right? He shall let them go because of a greater might. Indeed, because of the greater might, he shall drive them from his land. Right? Paro is going to be so overwhelmed eventually that he is going to beg Bnei Israel to leave. He's going to chase them out. And in verse 2, Vayadaber Elokim El Moshe Vayomer Elav Ani Hashem, God says to Moshe, I am God, and I appeared to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I did not make myself known to them. I established a covenant with them that I'm going to give them the land, Eretz Canaan, the land of Israel. And in verse 5, here's the key, V'gamani shamati et nakat b'nei Yisrael, I have heard the moaning and the suffering of the Jewish people because of the Egyptians are holding them in bondage. V'eskorat b'riti, I'm going to remember the covenant I made with Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov to take them out and to bring them to the land of Israel. Therefore, God says to Moshe, listen, tell Bnei Israel the following. I am God. And now we have 5 different words. 4 of them are used to correspond to 4 cups of wine at the Seder. Right? We have 4 cups of wine at the Seder. 4 of them are directly related to leaving Egypt. And that's, according to some, how we get to 4 cups. So then you should say to them, verse 6, Vehotzeti etchem mitachat zavot Mitzrayim. I will free you from the labors of the Egyptians. Vehitzalti etchem mevodatam. And I will deliver you from their bondage. Vegaalti etchem bezrov netuya. And I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with extraordinary judgments. Vilakachti etchem lilaam. And I will take you to be my people. And later, what's going to happen? And I will bring you into the land which I swore to give to the people. This is quite an announcement. Does anyone know what happened when Moshe relayed this message to the Jewish people? Anyone remember? Feel free to unmute yourself. What was their reaction? No takers? Going once? Okay, Marcia.
Well, I don't know, but my guess is that they were very hesitant and not all were too thrilled with this idea.
Okay, what would you have expected their response to be?
One of kind of surprise or shock or... What? What's going on? What does he mean? What's he taught? How can we do this?
Okay.
Negativity. No. Negativity.
Negativity. Okay. Anyone else want to share what they think? I mean, put yourself in Bnei Yisrael's shoes. You're enslaved for hundreds of years, and finally Moshe comes and tells you it's all over. We're getting out. Mm-hmm. What would you have? What would you? How would you have? Reacted. Stacy Aviva.
Ooh. So it's interesting because this is one of the things that I've kind of been doing some writing about is the mindset of someone who has been enslaved is that many times you begin to define yourself and your own identity in relationship to your oppressor and the oppression. And right. So you're more comfortable in that situation and your identity, not only is you thinking about freedom, you're thinking about, well, what's my identity now? Who am I if I'm not in relationship to this system of oppression or this oppressor, because you haven't yet established your own identity. So I think it would be a fear of, well, then who am I now?
Okay.
Who am I going to become?
Okay, that is very, very beautiful. Okay, and deep. Okay, thank you. Anyone else want to share what they thought, what they think B'nai Yisrael's response would have been, or what they know B'nai Yisrael's response was? All right, well, B'nai Yisrael says, we have here in verse number 9, Vayedaber Moshe Kein el B'nai Yisrael. Moshe does exactly what God tells him to do. He goes and tells B'nai Yisrael, you're going to be freed, you're going to be delivered, you're going to be redeemed, you're going to be, God's going to take you as his own, then you're going to be taken to the land of Israel. And what happens? Velo shamu el Moshe mikotzer ruach ume avodah kasha. They did not listen to him. They could not hear it, perhaps based on because of what Stacey Aviva said. Because of the cruel bondage, they identified themselves with that. Or they just couldn't imagine it was true. I mean, a much more prosaic answer. They just couldn't imagine being free. I mean, like Marcia said, it's up against Paro. It's the greatest power in the world. How are we going to get out? What's going to happen? Different ways to look at it. We have a friendly machloket between Marcia and Stacey Aviva. It's beautiful. Different ways to look at these psukim. So that's great.
Rabbi.
Yes, Marcia.
You know where you stand if you're a slave. There isn't, you're not making any of your own decisions. So you know where you stand. And that's it.
So it's this paradox of slavery. Correct.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. All right, let's keep going. Those are two beautiful answers. And now we're going to, I want to look for a moment before we get to Rav Huttner. I want to look for a moment at the section that we actually do say as part of the Magid. And then we'll put everything that we've studied together with a paragraph from Rabbi Henkin. So this is the paragraph, source number one, that is the centerpiece of Magid, the centerpiece of telling the story of the Exodus from Egypt. Va'anita, and it comes from Devarim, and it has, in context, it has nothing to do with the Exodus from Egypt. For those of you who were on last time, in context, this is what's called vidui bikurim. This is what the farmer says when the farmer brings their first fruits, their first crop to Jerusalem. It's an obligation every year to bring your first crop to Jerusalem. In context, it has nothing to do with the Exodus from Egypt. It mentions it, but again, the context is not about that. Vanita ve'amartel ne'ashem alokecha, you will recite before God, Aramiyo ve'davi v'yered mitzrayimah v'yagar sham b'mtei ma'at v'yisham l'goy gadol. My father was a fugitive Aramean. He went down to Egypt with meager numbers and he became great and populous there. But v'yareyo otano ha'mitrim, the Egyptians dealt harshly with us and oppressed us and they imposed heavy labor on us. Seven, we cried out to God, God of our ancestors, and God heard our plea and saw our plight, our misery and our oppression. And God took us out of Egypt with an outstretched arm, etc., and brought us to this place, and he gave us this land flowing with milk and honey. As I asked last week, if you were writing the Haggadah, I'm going to assume you would not have chosen this as the section to retell the story of the Exodus. You would have chosen the story of the Exodus as it's told in Exodus, right? In the book of Shemot, starting from chapter 2, and maybe going all the way through Shirat Hayam, all the way through Az Yashir, all the way through the Song of the Sea. Why is this chosen? Rabbi Soloveitchik gave his answer last week, and if you want the recording of that class, I'll be happy to share it with you. We have some new people on who were not on last week, so I'll ask you before we get to Rabbi Huttner, why is this the choice? Right, this is what the Mishnah, this is all the way back from all the way back to Temple times, for thousands of years. This is what we have been saying on the Seder night, to tell the story of the Exodus from Egypt, a collection of verses that's completely taken out of context, and doesn't even give us detail. Doesn't talk about what the Makot were, what the plagues were. Doesn't talk about the splitting of the sea. Doesn't talk about the specific type of suffering that Bnei Yisrael experienced, that the Jewish people experienced in Mitzrayim. Right there, this is unexpected. So, anyone want to offer a suggestion as to why this is the centerpiece of the Seder? Okay. Any takers? Okay. If there are no takers, then we're going to jump to see Rabbi Huttner's view of this. Okay. So Rabbi Huttner, I'm going to move to his essay. Did everyone see the screen just change to something different? Great. Okay. So the essay is in Hebrew. I'm going to read slowly and translate as we go. Right over here, letter Hey. Did everyone see my cursor circling around letter Hey? Okay. V'achshav, aleinu lefaresh ma'inyan parshat mikra bikurim lahagada. Now we have to explain what does the section of bikurim of the first fruits have to do with the Haggadah. The low ode, and not only that, Ela Shaharambam Hidgish She'el Parsha Zu Marbim Bidurushe Hamilim. The Rambam adds that the way to properly do this, Maimonides adds, the way to properly do the Seder is to add a great deal of explanation to each verse, which is what we do. Right, what we do this at the Seder. We read two lines of this section in Deuteronomy and have four lines of explanation, three words of this section of a verse in Deuteronomy and three lines of commentary. Then we do three more words, and then we have another three or four lines of commentary. This is the longest part of the Seder because we take these five verses and we dissect them almost word by word to get to the most exact and deep meaning of these words. And so Rabbi Huttner continues, and we're going to pick him up right over here. Tet. The Tzarich Ladat, Rabbi Huttner says, we have to realize something about what was going on during Yitziat Mitzrayim, what was going on at the time of the Exodus from Egypt. Let's just review for a moment. The Jewish people get out of Egypt according to rabbinic commentary just in time, right? They were just about to lose their own identity. Again, along the lines of Stacey Aviva, right? They were just about to lose their identity and be completely swallowed up, maybe by choice, into the culture of Egypt. We offered a Karban Pesach, right? We offered the Paschal sacrifice, despite that being a very frightening reality, right? Because the animals were sort of sacred to the Egyptians, and to sacrifice those animals was a direct affront to Egyptian sensibilities. But nonetheless, they did it. And then B'nai Yisrael saw the Egyptians have to endure the 10 Makot, the 10 plagues. And then there we sang a song of gratitude and thanksgiving to God when we crossed the sea. And the rabbis say that even the greatest prophets did not experience the type of direct access to God that the average Jew had at Yitziat Mitzrayim, at the splitting of the sea, right? This was the formation of our nation, right? This was a huge moment. However, there was something sort of some unfinished business going on here. Remember, we said that B'nai Yisrael had a negative reaction to the news that Moshe delivered on God's behalf, that the Jewish people were going to be spared, finally, and be taken out of Mitzrayim. They did not believe it. They did not accept it. So let's now read number 9. The Tzarich Ladat, right here where my cursor is floating. The Tzarich Ladat, we have to know, says Rabbi Huttner, Shegam acharei Yitziat Mitzrayim, Nishar Livnei Yisrael Chov Echad Litaken. That even after leaving Egypt, the Jewish people had some unfinished business. In Rabbi Huttner's words, they had one debt that still had to be paid, or one debt that had to be repaired or fixed. She'acharei kol hatovot shena'asu lahem, after all of the good that was done for B'nai Yisrael, v'chol hatikun l'kilkul hagalut, and all of the repair of being in exile, halo b'shato, at the time when the news was delivered, katuv, it says, Lo shamu el Moshe mikotzer ruach u'meavodah kasha. They didn't listen to Moshe. They didn't believe Moshe. They didn't accept what he had to say. Could mean a lot. Could mean all of these different things, right? The imkain nisheret tivya al oto halo shamu haneemeret bereish parshat va'era sheba neemru dalad lishonot shagula. So Rabbi Huttner was saying there's still some sort of issue, I'm not sure what word to use, some sort of issue that B'nai Israel still has to deal with by virtue of the fact that they basically told Moshe to take a hike when God said he was going to deliver them. There was some tikkun, some fix that still had to be made for B'nai Yisrael's unwillingness to forcefully break free from their slavery. And so Rabbi Huttner says that's what's happening in this paragraph, and that's why this paragraph is chosen. U'kisheba Moshe Rabbeinu levaser lahem sheyigalem ve'veti etchem le'eretz Yisrael. And furthermore, when Moshe came to tell them that he was going to bring them, that God was going to bring them to the land of Israel, lo kiblu et hadvarim. They did not accept the words, his words. Uchidei lohotzi yidei chovazo ba'im b'nei Yisrael u'machrizim b'parshat bikurim. But now to show that we do recognize that God did take us out. And more importantly, along the lines of what Stacey Aviva said and what Marcia said, we do recognize the importance of our own identity and not being swallowed up into the Egyptian, into the identity of the Egyptian or the master. Heveti et reshit pri adama. Here I am. I'm bringing the first fruits of the land. And then Rabbi Huttner says something very beautiful. And I'll read it in Hebrew and translate it. Mi sheyesh lo ozen kashevet. It's right over here. Anyone who has an attuned ear, an ear attuned, litzlilei hamikra, to the music of the Torah, yishma kan hadkasha veheveti, will hear the answer in the resounding declaration that they have brought a veheveti, that God brought them to the land, lumat lo shamu. When the farmer says, I have brought my first fruits, that's a response or a fix to their original lo shamu, to their original inability to hear that they're actually going to be freed. Lamirat ve'iveti etchem b'parshat ve'era. Right? It's the same word. I have brought my fruits is a response to their saying, we're not listening to you, God, when you say, you will bring us to the land of Israel. The exact same word, heveti veheveti. Right? So we'll go back and look at those two words real quickly. Here in Exodus, veheveti etchem el haaretz. I will bring you into the land. And what does Bnei Yisrael say? What happens? They don't listen. And then we come back to the declaration of the farmer, and it says, over here, Hine, I can't find it. He says, here I have brought, right? Mereshit Puri, it's the next verses. You have brought us the land. And here it is. I left it out. Sorry. Vata hine heveti et reshit pri adama. Here, behold, I have brought the first fruits, the first crop of the land. Right? So that use of the same word is a key, a clue to Rav Huttner that these two sections of the Torah are connected. One is a response to the other. Im kein, b'parshat mikra bikurim yesh aniya. There's a response in bikurim, or an answer. Yesh tshuva v'tikun lahalo shamu. There's a fix and a correction to Bnei Yisrael's first not listening. B'nikreit parshat mikra bikurim b'lashon aniya lumat hasipur b'chlal shenikra lashon hagadah. And here, this bikurim is called an answer, and not like the rest of the Haggadah, which is called a story. Because an answer is an attempt to respond to something that we did. I'm answering for what I did. And so I'm going to explain in great detail why what I said back there was a temporary mistake, but now in fact, I get it. So according to Rabbi Huttner, the reason why we read this section is because it is a way to sort of fix our initial inability, or to declare that we have fixed our initial inability or unwillingness to take upon ourselves our own identity. And I really like the way that Stacey Aviva put it and that Marcia put it, that this is a question of an inability or unwillingness to look at oneself as different from their oppressor. And by saying, here, look, I have brought my fruit from my land, that's it. That's them saying, now I'm my own person. I got my own land, I'm my own nation. And the use of the same words, Rav Huttner geniusly picks up on the use of those same words to say that in the first section in Shemot, that word was rejected, but now I'm going to use that very same word. The Torah is going to use that very same word to show that B'nai Israel accepted their identity upon themselves. And I think that it's just a beautiful expression of that took B'nai Israel the time to be able to accept that reality. And they may have not been ready to accept it at the time of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. And so God just took them out. And over time, they were able to develop that sense of independence and their sense of identity. And that section in Deuteronomy, which serves as the centerpiece of the Haggadah, sort of proves that point, because the farmers are the ones who declare it. B'nai Yisrael themselves are the ones who declare it. So last week we had Rabbi Soloveitchik's approach that had to do with Thanksgiving and the land of Israel. And this week, Rabbi Huttner's approach is about how we build identity and how we differentiate ourselves and the importance of that and the fact that that could take time. And it was many, many years past, right? Well, B'nai Israel were in the desert. That was the time it took them to really figure this whole thing out, to finally be able to say, Vehiveti, I have brought my own fruit from my land that God gave me. Even though I rejected it earlier, that was because I was suffering from many, many years where I was not given the right to express my own identity. And I finally now, after many years of being able to do it, I'm finally able to declare it. And with that, we'll end and see if anyone has any comments or questions before we say goodnight.
Rabbi, I would love, and you probably put it in the WhatsApp, just the sources for this, because I was actually writing an op-ed on this very thing. And I think that if that this is something I want to put in there, that kind of really kind of seals the connection that I was trying to make. So thank you.
I'll share it with you for sure. I'll send it to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for framing it that way. I wasn't going to frame it that way at the beginning, so I was thinking about this, but your framing, I think, really helps me understand better what Rabbi Huttner was getting at. So thank you for that. All right, folks have been very quiet. Let's hear from you. Let's hear Clarissa. Tell me about your Seder. What's your Seder like? Do you read the whole Haggadah? Do you have people?
Rabbi, good night.
Give me some insight into the Cohen family Seder.
So we were, Blake and I were like, why don't we tell the story of the Exodus in the Seder? You don't tell the story. So we wrote a play. Nice. And everyone gets cast in the play. And, nice. You know.
Who are you? What part do you play?
I'm the host of the Seder. So that's a big role.
Okay. That is a big role.
You know, we kind of assign people on the spot. And
do you have large Seders, large groups?
Yeah. Well, this year, I think we're going to have, hi, honey. You got to go to bed. Good night. This year we'll have 20 people.
Holy mackerel, that's big.
Yeah, it's a lot of people.
So and everyone gets a part and a script, or it's ad lib?
It's all scripted, and I think we're going to add a couple more parts to accommodate. You know, we want the children in it.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah.
Well, that sounds like a blast. All right.
Yeah. Great.
That sounds like fun. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
Thank you. And thank you for joining the class. It was a treat to have you on.
Yeah, this was incredible. I'm so sad I missed last week's.
So am I, but I'm glad you're here this week.
Yes. Thank you.
Great. Great.
Good night.
Good night, Marcia.
Good night.
Thank you. Thank you. Stacey Aviva, you are going to be with Craig and Hannah?
Yes.
Nice. Great. Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. And Miriam and Ben, you guys are going to be here somewhere at higher altitude. Where are you going to be?
In a higher altitude.
In a higher, spiritually and physically.
Hopefully so. Yeah,
Yeah.
no, it's
Yeah.
great up there.
Yeah.
It's a nice Seder. Thank you.
Great. I
Thank you.
hope everyone's seders are great. Hope to see you all before Pesach. Thank you for coming on and for sharing your thoughts and ideas. And I hope to see you all soon. All right. Good night, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.